Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You've let me down, you've let Rue down, you've let yourselves down. It was such a nice moment.
Yeah.
Hello everybody, welcome to another episode of the Bakedown Podcast. My name is Sarah, I will be hosting today, and with us as always we have the lovely Dan, Jane and Howard. So how are you today, guys? We are talking about dessert week, quite a staple in Bake Off history. We've had quite a few dessert weeks before. Howard, what did you think of dessert week?
I liked part of it, wasn't keen on another part of it. It's a little bit like desserts generally, isn't it? You want a bit of a selection. You want a kind of dessert trolley and choose the bits that you like and avoid the ones you don't. And I thought that was the kind of theme of this week for me. So, yeah.
In fact, it did look like an old-fashioned dessert trolley, didn't it? The whole thing, really. I used to like it in an Italian restaurant when they'd come out with the desserts. I used to save myself for the dessert trolley. So it's got one of my favourites in it, I have to say.
Oh, I'm looking forward to hearing what we've all got to say when we get to the individual challenges. So, Dad, what did you think of Dessert Week?
Yes, Dessert Week is always a good week, one that sort of sifts the wheat from the chaff. I forget who won Star Bacon Dessert Week on my season. I think it might have been me. I'm a big fan of desserts. They're sort of where my heart is. For some reason, such good feelings, Howard. I can't quite put my finger on it. Was that potentially one of the worst technicals we have ever seen? I think it was
a week
of ups and downs. We'll obviously get onto the technical in due course. But yeah, there were some real highlights and some real lowlights. But I think it was an entertaining one overall, certainly, and another interesting result to talk about at the end.
Absolutely. Car crash, I believe, was the word used a few times to describe the technical. But as you rightly say, we shall get onto that. But before we start discussing what happened in Desserts Week, we have another bake-along class to talk about. So we will be doing Dessert Week with the lovely Howard. It's your turn this week, Howard. So can you tell us what you're going to be doing for our Dessert Week bake-along challenge?
Yeah, I promise I'm not copying Dan. But I'm doing a bit of a mashup. So I am doing creme caramel, but I'm doing orange and ginger flavours. So what I'm doing is a ginger custard as the basis for the creme caramel. And we're going to make some little orange Langoustine biscuits as well to go with them.
Oh, lovely. Mm. Sounds delicious.
Well, that sounds fantastic, Howard. A nice merging of the signature and technical challenges there. Very nice. So if anybody wants to join Howard for his Dessert Week creme caramel class, you can join Howard on Sunday, the 12th of November. And you can join me as well. I shall be there. And that sounds like it's going to be a fantastic class. You can sign up from the Bake with a Legend website. And if you are signing up for any more of our fantastic classes that we have on in the next few months, Christmas is definitely on its way. We have some Christmas classes signed up for you with Jane, Dan and Howard, all my lovely co-hosts here. Then don't forget, you can use the code PODCAST to get 10% off your next booking. So hopefully we'll see you at a class very soon. Well, let's start on Dessert Week. And the signature, as we've heard, was 8 creme caramels, which, for those of you who don't know, is a set custard with a sort of a caramel sauce on top. It was 2 hours and 45 minutes for this challenge. Everybody made 8 caramels, apart from Matty, who decided to make 12. Interesting choice.
That's smart.
Did he just misunderstand the brief? Or what happened there, do we think?
I think... If it were me, I might have made a couple of extras just to be sure, because you never quite know how they're going to turn out. You know, as Prue said, you've got to have them set enough but soft enough that they're still palatable. So I don't know. I think that was a good strategy. I think I might have done that as well.
Yeah, and it wasn't a bad. We often say you ought to have some spares, as we've seen already. That, you know, was it Tasha last week who had a spare wraparound thing for her cake?
Ah, yes.
And the thing is with creme caramels in your oven, if you're putting it all in the water bath, which you do, the ones in the middle tend not to cook as quickly as the ones on the outside. So then you could move them around and have some setting slightly differently or so. I don't know. Anyway, I don't think it was a bad idea. Why not? And then you could always eat one, which, ooh, frankly, creme caramel is now and always has been my absolute favourite dessert.
Yay!
Forever. I love them. So, I, you know, have 12. You can eat 4 and give the others to the judges, as far as I'm concerned. More the merrier.
Now, I'm quite intrigued, Jane, about how you eat yours. And maybe we should ask Howard as well, as he's been rustling up a couple lately. Did you used to do that thing when you were a kid? You'd get them, you know, ready-made, wouldn't you, from the shop? I don't know if you ever bought them, but you were in it. Inhale them in one bite. Did you never do that as a party trick, where you would lean down and inhale the whole creme caramel? No.
Not up your nose.
Not literally. Oh. It's a metaphor, Howard.
Shove a whole lot in my mouth. Isn't that big?
Yeah.
Dan, it might work for you, but not for me.
No. I couldn't do it, actually, but my brother could. My brother and my father used to do it quite frequently. They used to find it hilarious and make my mother absolutely furious. But they just bend down and suck up the entire thing in one mouthful. No. Everyone's looking horrified. Did you people not have a childhood?
We did, but we had manners, I think, as well. Which...
We didn't have those.
Right, I have no idea what just happened there. That was an interesting couple of minutes. But yes, this was very nostalgic, apparently, for a couple of people. I think Paul said it reminded him of his childhood, and clearly it's reminding you guys of your childhood as well. But Jane, I get the impression you would have made your own.
Oh, absolutely. Used to be, I think my mother occasionally used to get a packet mix. You could packet mix them, which tasted disgusting. But yeah, I always make my own and will still make them when I've got friends that don't mind eating cold custard coming along for supper. I tend not to make them just when it's Ray and I, because I would eat the whole lot. I absolutely would eat the whole lot. And the one thing that I found distressed me on this challenge, one where they're all messing about with flavours. I like the good old standard Italian, French, with lots of lovely vanilla. But all their caramel was so pale. And the beauty of a creme caramel is that the caramel is just on the edge of being overcooked to give that slight bitterness to the creamy, as a foil for the creamy custard underneath. You can't have it as sort of this just very pale amber caramel, because it's just too sweet. So it was all a little bit pale for me this week, But oh goodness me, I love them. In fact, I might make some this weekend just to eat.
I need to send you my picture of my creme caramel now to get your judgment.
Oh yes, changed. Judge Jane.
I'll send it for her.
Jane, you've been threatening to join Howard and Dan's classes all through when we've been doing this bake along series.
And
you've yet to appear. So I'm wondering if this might
really
be the class.
I wanted to appear in Dan's class, and I think somebody said, "Oh, Jane was going to come to this, wasn't she?" Yeah, I don't. I mean, as much as I love you guys, absolutely. 5 o'clock on a Sunday evening for me is collapse day. It's
For me too. But we're on the floor anyway.
Sit on the sofa. Yeah, but we rise to the occasion when it's our class.
Yes, of course we do.
We do.
Oh, Jane, have you seen that Howard's just sent through a beautiful picture of his caramels?
Oh no, hang on.
I appreciate that listeners won't be able to see this.
Howard, perfect colour.
Oh, good.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect. They look lovely. Those long chat look gorgeous as well. Oh, and no bubbles in your caramel. That is fabulous, Howard. Fabulous. 10 out of 10.
Well done, Howard. You get a handshake from Jane.
Hey. A silly little story. Many, many, many years ago, I was going on holiday with my parents. I was obviously old enough to drive because we were sharing the driving. Anyway, we were going down to the south of France and we hadn't booked anywhere to stay overnight. And we pulled into this dusty little hamlet, honestly, with all the shutters shut everywhere. And there's a sign on a wall saying rooms. And we thought, well, we can't drive any further. And there was these huge wooden double doors. And in we went into this, it was like this oasis of geraniums and rooms around this courtyard. It was absolutely beautiful. It's like, phew, we've been driving for hours. But the supper we had, I can't remember what the main course was, but the supper that we had was this beautiful creme caramel. And I remember it to this day. It must have been 40 odd years ago or more. And it was the most delicious thing I've ever eaten. So creme caramels have a huge, huge place in my heart. It was, I'm delighted to see this challenge, I have to say. But Howard's, yours looks ace.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
It does.
There's longer chat in the picture. If anybody's interested in this class, have a look. It's just super photo. Very nice styling.
Yes. Because you do need that little bit of crunch.
I don't need to push this class at all. Jane's doing it for me. Fantastic.
Just lovely.
I expect a sold out class with Howard here.
Well, let's hope so.
Well, let's get back onto the signature challenge. We had some very interesting flavours here. Straight away, I'm drawn to Dan's because it was most unusual. But what did we think of Dan's? Dan, what did you think of Dan's?
On the sight of it, wasn't that into it, to be completely honest. I dare say it was probably one of those things that, you know, if you tasted it, it was lovely. But it didn't inspire me. The Thai green curry was, I mean, I love Thai green curry, but I haven't thought about having it as a creme caramel. It looks very impressive. I like the little, was it the sort of sesame work he had?
Tweel.
Yeah. A lot of them had a tweel. I was starting to wonder if a tweel was a compulsory element at that point. But no, some other people had some other decoration. I thought Dan's was interesting. But the person who just brought me most anxiety in this one was dear old Matty. And I'll ask you about this, Jane, because so obviously you talk about when you cook a caramel, the darker it is, the more complex of a flavour it has. So it's sort of more desirable as a contrast. I'm wondering, he had such problems with his caramel. What on earth happened there? Now, if I crystallise my syrup, I would just keep going because it will melt again and become a caramel, won't it? So I don't know why he kept throwing it away. I was a bit confused about that one.
You're asking the person who did that so many times in the tent. I could not make a caramel in the tent to save my life, except for maybe in dessert week, actually, when I did manage to make some caramel at some point. I don't know. I really don't know. Nobody else seemed to have a problem. Poor old Matty. And when mine crystallises, I do tend to chuck it away.
Oh, really?
Which it never crystallises at home. I don't know what it is, but poor old Matty. And then he made it clearly as in a frying pan.
Dry caramel. Dry one.
A dry caramel. Yeah. I love a dry caramel. I find, I know you don't. I know you like a, whenever I make a wet caramel, I always think of you. I don't know why. Oh. Why is that? I mean, we have discussed caramel a lot of times, haven't we? Do you put in some citrus? Do you put in a bit of glucose or honey or golden syrup, which all helps with the not crystallizing problem, or helps to get you through. But I like a dry caramel because you can stir it and you can just stand over it and stir it, and it happens so much faster. But yeah, there we go. Poor old Matty, my heart went out to him and to the lady who washes up, because
Jane, I think that belongs on a card. Roses are red, violets are blue. Whenever I make a wet caramel, I think of you.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Sweet. I'm touched.
I don't know. It doesn't sound awfully, awfully lovely, really.
Well, we're talking about Matty, so let's go on to his flavours. He had a chai, coconut and vanilla custard with some little sugar decorations. And I think he had... He had a pretty good time. They looked very nice. Apparently, the flavours were nice. A tad overbaked, apparently, which I'm a little surprised at, given that he didn't have that much time. You know, he spent a lot of time on his caramel. But he came out rather well from that challenge. Howard, what did you think of Matty's?
I did think he managed to retrieve it quite well. I think the judges said it tasted delicious. So, yeah, well done. I have to say, though, the one that really drew me was Saku's. Dan and I have spoken in previous weeks about words that we like. What was this one? Watalapan.
Watalapan.
Watalapan. Creme caramel. Yeah, lovely word.
Not such a nice creme caramel, no. Sadly. But a lovely word. I've never used jaggery. Have you guys used jaggery?
No. Yeah. It's just sugar, basically. It just tastes like brown sugar. I mean, it's slightly different, but basically it's brown sugar, I think.
Well, it obviously sets slightly differently.
We'll probably get complaints about me saying that.
But she did the classic, didn't she? She says she used whole eggs as well.
Mm.
And I'm not aware that she used a mix of eggs and egg yolks. So for anybody who doesn't do custards like this, The whites help it set and the yolks make it richer and more delicious. So you do need a mixture of both, otherwise you end up like a sort of an omelette with caramel on top, which I think she... Well, I know that's a bit cruel, isn't it? But hers was too set. Actually, it's got to be that lovely, lovely wobble, a bit like a panna cotta. It has to be exactly the right texture, otherwise it's a bit tough. Hers, I think, was a bit tough.
It was a little bit, wasn't it? But Tasha's sounded really nice. She had a rosemary custard, a fig compote and a honey caramel. I've never heard of a honey being made into a caramel. She described it as a cheats caramel. What did you think about that one? Is that a proper caramel or...?
I don't know where the cheats part of it comes in. Like, it's just cooking sugar more, isn't it? I mean, there's no reason it can't work, wouldn't you say?
I agree. Just gives you a slightly different flavour, doesn't it? There's a recipe of Jamie Oliver's in his 30-minute cookbook, which is completely misnamed because it takes you a lot longer than 30 minutes. Mm. However, the recipes are pretty good. And it's one that he does, it's his satay one, and he makes caramelised cashews. And basically you put cashews in a pan with honey and cook it down so the cashews get caramelised, and they're absolutely delicious. Quite how it would work as on the top of this custard, because by the time you baked it, it does go a little bit runny, the caramel. Very often you'll leave some caramel in the base of your ramekin or whatever it is you're using. So the honey just didn't seem to set quite as well as some of the other caramels. But Tasha, as always, I've always thought she was great. Until she said creme caramel. Basically, it's cold, gelatinous, gross. I thought, Tasha, you've just fallen off my favourite list. You cannot describe it as cold, gelatinous and gross. Not my favourite dessert in the whole wide world.
Oh.
But I love the idea of fig, honey, and rosemary. I thought it sounded delicious.
I have a question about names quickly. So in America, they call this flan, apparently. That's a thing. But when we say flan, we mean quiche, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like,
you can have a sweet flan. As well as a kind of savoury quiche, you can have a sweet flan, can't you? But it's not...
What's the difference?
I think the difference is, when you think of a flan, it's a shallow, open tart, really. Whether that be...
Is that all it means?
Savoury tart. Yeah. I think so. In the UK, I think so. I could be wrong.
Years ago, this is going back at... I don't know if they even still do them. You used to get these dreadful kind of sponge tart cases that you could then put. And they were sometimes called flan.
I thought it was curious because the Americans call it flan. We call it creme caramel. And this another word puzzly for us to be doing with the Americans. I love a flan, but I never think of it as a creme caramel.
No, but they do in Spain as well. A Spanish flan is the same.
Is it?
So maybe it's just us. I've just Googled flan, and all that I've got a picture of creme caramels here. So I think we're wrong.
No,
it's never possible, is it? No, that couldn't be right. No, the rest of the world's wrong.
Absolutely.
We're British, darling.
Well, whose flavours haven't we discussed?
Can I just ask something about this dance? What is coriander root?
I don't know.
The root of the coriander plant?
Yes, thank you, Sarah.
Good call.
Thanks.
I think
I'm really knowledgeable about baking, guys.
I think, of course, in America, the leaf is cilantro, isn't it? But the root is coriander. So maybe that's why, I think that's the case. Whereas we call the whole thing coriander, they call the leaves cilantro, which I think is Spanish, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know, but I've never seen coriander root. I've never used coriander root, and I don't know how that flavour differs, because we went to supper with a Vietnamese friend last weekend, and everything had coriander in it. Absolutely everything, or cilantro. I'm sure we've discussed this before. Some people genetically taste it very differently to the way others taste and cannot eat it. My poor husband bit into the first thing and couldn't eat any of it and pushed it around his plate and got him home. And he was going, I'm so hungry. I'm so hungry. And I just wondered how the coriander root tasted compared to coriander seeds, which are very different and are yummy. I just wondered. If anybody knows, just write in and let us know.
Do you reckon he foraged it? Is that would he have dug that up somewhere?
I don't think Dan's a forager. Is Dan a forager? I can't remember now.
He's a little bit of a forager, I think. Yeah. But let's talk about the other bakers that we haven't touched on for this challenge. There was Christie's, which was an orange and nutmeg custard, very orange flavoured, which sounded really nice, with the orange liqueur segments on top and candied orange peel. Mm. So very, very orangey. The judges described it as a rough texture around the edges. I think as the challenge came to a close, she was like, oh, those damn bubbles. So that meant it was slightly overbaked. And the orange flavour came through, but Paul said, and not caramel. So did that mean maybe that the caramel wasn't strong enough, wasn't dark enough, maybe?
I think so.
I think it was also a polite way of saying there was maybe a bit too much orange in it. Every element was orange. Mm-hmm. I think it could have used a little bit more variety. But generally, I like Christy. I don't think she tries to go too crazy with the flavours. And generally, I think she succeeds. Obviously, she just slightly overpowered it today.
You do have to be careful. You can't have the oven up too high on these things. Because otherwise, I think one of the comments was, from Prue, maybe it was boiled inside. So you end up sort of scrambled egg if you're not careful. And the bubbles on the outside. So you do have to be really careful and just be patient and go sort of low and slow in the water bath, I always find. I'm always like, come on, hurry up and cook. And then they always take longer than I think. But they're worth the wait.
Josh's were also overbaked, weren't they? So he did the plum and custard cinnamon orange with the chocolate butterfly on. And I thought that was quite an improvement, actually. He tempered his chocolate. I assume it was chocolate week from memory. And he sort of had not done a successful job of tempering it at all. So I'm really proud of him for coming back and having a good go with the butterflies. And I thought they looked quite nice.
I did too. He piped leaves that week that Christy tried to get chocolate leaves out of a mould and couldn't. He piped leaves that week in the same way he piped butterflies.
Did he?
Was very impressive. He did, yes. And I don't think we discussed it, but I thought it was much better that you pipe them rather than struggle with the mould. We piped spider legs in our webinar the other week. So, you know.
Oh, for Halloween, yeah.
For Halloween, we did. I thought they looked pretty. They obviously had a brief that they couldn't just do a creme caramel. They had to add some sort of decoration to it. But, yeah, I thought his flavours sounded nice as well. I mean, I thought all their flavours sounded quite nice except for Dan's, which didn't set me alight at all.
Possibly something that you just had to, you had to taste in the moment. Which obviously we can't do. But yes, Josh has got nice praise from the judges, a cinnamon orange custard, cinnamon spiced plums, which sounded really nice. Slightly overbaked, yes, they were slightly, but the plum and orange apparently really delicious, came through perfect sweetness, and some people didn't manage to get the sweetness in good balance with the other flavours, but I think Josh did there, and the plums were nice and sort of fresh fruit taste. So I think overall a pretty good challenge so far for the signature. Now, I must just admit, I was looking back over previous dessert weeks to see how much dessert week was a staple in Bake Off. And for series three, it seems a little familiar. The signature was a tort cake, which we've done. The technical was a creme caramel and the showstopper was a meringue dessert.
Wow.
Okay.
So this is a little similar. To what we've done in the past. But that's nice, you know.
Well,
that was
that's not a bad
over
thing.
10 years ago. No, not at all.
Do you remember, like, last year when we were moaning about the challenges being too complicated and that we thought that maybe the producers were just stretching for anything they hadn't done before? And I think the quality of the challenges has been a lot better this year. I think they've been more interesting. They felt more approachable. They felt more classic. So I'm not complaining. I don't hear anyone complaining that they've done these challenges before. I think enough time has passed. I think it's a good thing. What do you reckon, Howard?
Yeah, because I think half of the bakers didn't watch the earlier series in any case. Well, they were too young, so
yeah.
Oh, goodness me. Yes, I completely agree. That's but Jane, what do you think?
Oh, I'm loving it, and there's some very basic cooking and baking skills that are required to have done a lot of the challenges, and I think, gosh, I'm sorry, bakers, I think it's showing some holes in their experience, maybe. Which is a good thing, because I think the bakers on Bake Off should be basically very good basic bakers. I mean, none of us are allowed to go on the show if we've done classes or done this or done whatever. And we can't be professionals. We can't have done a cordon bleu course. We can't do any of those things. So the only thing that we can be good at is our basic skills that we've taught ourselves at home or we've learnt on YouTube, which didn't happen in my day. Because, yes, there was no such thing as an internet or even a computer. And I think it is showing some basic holes. Who's sniggering somebody in the background? Is that I think it is really showing some holes in their experience and ability. Now, I know we all get better after the show. I think we've all somehow improved and learnt a lot and had the confidence to try to take on new challenges. But you know, well, when we get to the technical, gosh, it really was a disaster. And we have had one or two disasters on skills that I would have expected them to be good at. Thank goodness we haven't done much shoe pastry yet, because I would probably be throwing things at the television. But I love all the bakers. But I really do think it is back to basics this year, and all the better for it. That was a very long way of going around it. Never use one word when 50 will do. I think it's been really interesting. And I think people at home might be going, but I can do that. Why are they having such problems? It's interesting. It's been interesting. I love it. I think it's been a great series so far.
But there's definitely no point in making a challenge easy. You know, we need to test people. So it's, in a way, it's nice that we're seeing these holes in their knowledge because it is testing them. You know, it is a competition. We don't want them to just come in and everybody be perfect. We want to see, I mean, yes, it is reality TV, so we do want to see the mistakes and the drama, but we do want to see the challenge. You know, we are testing them, especially in the technical. It is a test, so there's no point in making a test easy.
Mm. And if we were grading these on a bell curve, where would the C be? Like, where, who would have done well in this? Like, what would average look like in this exam?
So, yes, on that.
I think we should get into it, Sarah. Yeah.
We shall, yes. So let's start on our technical challenge, which if you've watched the episode and if you've listened to the first few minutes of the podcast, you'll know that it possibly wasn't the best. I didn't have many notes for everybody's comments.
No, me neither.
I think raw and awful came up a bit more than I'd have liked.
Inedible, yep.
Car crash.
If you haven't seen the episode, please don't think we're being incredibly harsh. This is straight from the horse's mouth. Paul and Prue, we're not particularly impressed.
Or in Paul's words, that is disgusting. That was his first words walking into the tent. So
that's true.
Yeah. There's a lot to look forward to in this segment.
So the technical was six orange and ginger treacle steamed puddings with a creme anglaise and a ginger and orange syrup. And they only had an hour and a half for this, which Paul and Prue seem to think was plenty of time. So do we think an hour and a half is plenty of time for a steamed pudding?
Can I preface this with a more important question? Which is, Jane and Howard, how long would you have baked these steamed puddings for? If you were just got into the tent with your mind and they're like, right, you're going to make these steamed puddings, how much time are you allowing for cooking, honestly, without knowing the answer? How long would have you have allowed?
So when I make steamed mini puddings, I actually steam them.
Yeah, I do.
So I put them in a pan of water with either a trivet or an upturned saucer or something to raise them off the bottom. And cover each one individually with greaseproof paper and then foil. And I will steam them for 50 to 60 minutes.
Howard's nodding, yeah?
Well, I am, because I think if you're doing it that way, and that is definitely the way that I would do it, it's almost impossible to overcook them because they That's literally true, are. Yeah. So I'd rather make sure that I've given them an hour or whatever. I think we said possibly in the last series or maybe the series before, someone was doing a steam pudding in the way that this one was done, which was in a bain-marie in the oven. And I've never done it like that. But I would assume that if it's using the steam to cook it, it's going to have to be similar to doing it on the hob.
Yeah.
So,
See, I honestly don't know if I would have put them in for long enough. So I would very likely have been one of those bakers who was turning out some half-cooked little disc. But I wouldn't have known how long to bake them for. I honestly wouldn't have known. And unfortunately, there's no way to know before turning them out, is there? You've got to just hope that you've got it right. And obviously, I think this might have been a case of the bakers following each other off a cliff. You know, maybe one person thinks that half an hour is enough, and so the next person just goes for it. But yeah, it was unfortunate viewing, wasn't it?
But I think also they were almost, in a way, set up to fail, weren't they? Because even in the introduction, Paul is saying to Prue, they need 40 minutes, 4-0. You know, and so he's making a point of the fact that it's a lot longer than you think it's going to be. And if you don't have that kind of basic knowledge, what can you expect, really?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I couldn't work out, did they have to make their caramel first and put some caramel in the sponge?
Oh, that I don't know.
Why were they so long guessing in the oven?
It was complicated, wasn't it?
Yes, it appeared they had to make a caramel and put water into it to make it some sort of treacle, put that in the mould, then put the batter in the mould, and then bake it, which
I don't quite understand why they were adding the water to the caramel. What was that doing? Just thinning it down? But some of them were adding loads of water. So I didn't really get that. Did you get that?
I didn't. No, I wasn't quite sure what was going on. Because they then poured their caramel sauce over the puddings. Because the ones that they bring out, like, oh, Prue, these are lovely. Let's taste these.
Oh, they look.
They looked really bold. I mean, they looked dreadful.
They did. They looked cold.
They looked really dreadful. And then they poured over this, what probably was a cold custard. I was just having a look here. I'm looking at other people. So Angela Hartnett, who you may or may not know, guys, especially if you're listening in the US, wonderful chef over here. She's Italian, but she's very British. She cooks hers, as we would do, in a steamer on the hob. I'm just looking to see what other people say. And most people choose to cook them on the top. Oh, here we go. Whose is this? Good housekeeping. Pour enough water up the sides and bake for 25 minutes. I suspect 25 minutes, I would not find that to be long enough.
No.
Howard, you and I, are old enough. No, I'm a lot older than you, Howard. But
no, you're not.
Well, I am. We're old enough to actually know and love a steamed pudding. It used to be a real favourite on a Sunday lunchtime. We used to have one, I'm sure I've talked about it, it's called Good Pud, which my brother used to call Good Pud, and it was a steamed treacle pudding, and all the golden syrup would just melt all over it. It was absolutely delicious. So I suppose we have a bit more experience in how to cook these steamed puddings. It's obviously not something that's terribly popular these days, sadly, because it is a thing of absolute joy in the winter, and especially if you have a little mini one that you can just sort of warm up, you can cook them and then rewarm them in the microwave afterwards. Absolutely delicious. And I just think it just showed a lack of experience and maybe a change in fashion. You know, somebody said that the creme caramel was old school. Well, maybe these little steamed puddings would be considered to be old school as well.
I think Noel said, like, oh, these are from the Victorian age. I know he was joking, but everybody was saying how old-fashioned they were. And it's like, I'm not even 30 and I grew up on these. I love a sponge, steamed sponge pudding. It's made up my childhood.
It's a shame.
Yeah, no, we used to have steamed puddings all the time. But fairness, I don't think I cook steamed puddings for the kids. So that's not something that I typically make. I don't know why. Maybe I should make one.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
One we used to have a similar one, which is full of golden syrup.
We did a big one a few years ago, didn't we? We did have a challenge, a big one,
was that a Sussex pond pudding?
God, that's something completely different. Sussex pond pudding, I think, had disasters with that as well. She put a lemon in the middle of that, not to be interrupted. But I think Ian, lovely Ian Cummings, is experienced with Sussex pond pudding. They made full size puddings, and I think what's his name, is it Ian Carter, Stephen Carter Bailey or Bailey Carter, or never remember his surname, he made a lemon and blackcurrant one, which was absolutely delicious. So they have made steamed puddings. You thought people would have watched it, learned from it, or
well, I didn't know, Jane.
Maybe they put their water in cold instead of putting it in boiling from the kettle, because they certainly had experiences of that in Bain-Maries in the past.
Yeah.
I don't know, but goodness me, it was a disaster, wasn't it?
I think they followed each other off a cliff. I think that's what it is. I think someone took those out early and everyone else just copied them. I think that's probably what happened. But it was good. I think Tasha's feedback was something like that at least one's half-baked or something. It was... it's actually got a bake on it.
She only rescued hers by taking it out of the water bath, didn't she?
Did she
baked it partly. So,
maybe that would have helped.
Yeah, she did. She took them out of the water bath. Yes, a little bit. She baked them in the water bath, then took them out and just stuck them back in without the water. So, yes, maybe that helped. But yes, there isn't much more to say about this challenge, really. The comments from the judges were not particularly, I was going to say not particularly kind, but I think they were possibly quite apt compared to how not cooked they were.
My favourite feedback was Matty's. He said, terrible burnt nilpois. Fair enough.
Yes, his syrup was rather solid, wasn't it? I think he'd reduced that a little too far. But they were all in such good spirits about it. And I think that's what's so nice about this challenge. You know, everybody just realised that, okay, it's gone wrong. Obviously, Paul and Prue continued to rib them throughout the Showstopper challenge. But, you know, I love the bit like, you've let me down, you've let Prue down, you've let yourselves down. it was such a nice moment. You know, it was nobody was berating them or telling them off. It was just like, it happened. Okay. Nobody knew how long to cook it for. We move on. So that was sweet. Yes. And so, I don't think the ranking is particularly helpful in this instance, but I'll do it anyway. Matty was down at the bottom in sixth with his solid syrup. Saku was fifth, Christy was fourth, Josh was third, Dan was second, and Tasha was first. And power to Tasha, she was like, yep, I'll take that. A win's a win. So fair play to her.
Yep.
It does make me wonder as well whether we might see these resurfacing again in the final. Because quite often in previous years, when people have had an absolute disaster, they're made to deal with the demon again in the final, aren't they? So.
Maybe. Oh, good point, Howard. Maybe we will see this again in a few weeks' time.
Gosh, I hope
they've learned. So, as always, guys, we ask you to send in some questions and comments that you have about the show, about the podcast. We've got lots of questions and comments from you all, so thank you so much, and do please keep sending them in. Now, we have a comment here from Colleen in Massachusetts. Hello, Colleen. And she says, Dan mentioned that he wondered if the Americans can understand Nikki's Scottish accent. As an American, I've been watching Bake Off with subtitles on since Flo was on in Series 8. Her Liverpool accent and idioms made me rewind over and over until we put the show on subtitles. But she does love the show. That just makes me happy. So, Colleen, obviously, hopefully you'll be getting every word there since you've got subtitles on. So thank you for writing in to tell us that. We have a question here from Iris in Atlanta. And Iris says, I have always wondered if the order of the judging for the signature and the showstopper, as shown in the final cut, is the same order as the judging done in the tent. And how and when is that judging order determined?
The answer is no, isn't it?
I think
what you'll sometimes find if you watch carefully is that people who have had their bait judged, so that they've been sampled and so on, in a couple of judgments later, it's back on the bench whole, so it's not always shown in the order that it was judged in the tent. And I think that's partly because they'll either build up to someone who's done well or build up to someone who's done really badly in the edit, I think.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the way I understand it as well. Sometimes when they're judging, we were in the tent, when they were judging, they sort of tend to move in a circle. So they'll go, clockwise or anti-clockwise, I don't remember. So once you know who's first, you kind of know who's going to be last. And sometimes you wonder if they've done it to create a bit of suspense or something based on how the previous day went or whatever. But yeah, it just whatever suits the story best, I think, is what ends up on TV. As Howard said, you've got to know who's doing well and who's doing badly, haven't you? So we'll... They try and build up the drama a little bit.
Oh, well, I've never really noticed. I never thought about it, but you're eagle-eyed if you see uneaten bakes or untouched bakes on somebody else's bench. Yeah, well done. I never even thought about that.
Did you never notice that, Jay? I'm just surprised you never noticed that.
I'm not very observant, clearly.
Well, there we go. Obviously, there's a slightly different order there. So thank you, Iris, for that question. Iris also says, thank you for the wonderful podcast. I really enjoy listening to your banter. So you're very welcome, Iris. We enjoy bringing it to you.
Thank you, Iris.
And we have a third question here from Melinda, who is from Washington, D.C. So hello, Melinda. She says, Dan, Howard, Jane and Sarah, hello. I've been loving the podcast this season and loved attending Bake with a Legend online classes. Each time I've taken a class, I felt more confident in my baking skills. So thank you so much for that. Well, that's down to you guys. Well done for your fantastic teaching there. So you're very welcome.
I don't know. You give us tips as well sometimes, don't you, Sarah? Sometimes Sarah busts in with a tip in the middle of the class. And I'm like, who's teaching this class, Sarah? What's this about?
She's like, just such a prima donna.
She's like, you know, Jane does it this way. I'm like, all right, Sarah.
Well, she would, Dan. Of course she would. Well, we also get some lovely tips from the bakers that join our classes. I think we every day is a learning day. And that's a joy as well. I think our classes are brilliant. I learn stuff. And hopefully you do too, Dan.
Yes, I do.
Dan, I only give out little hints and tips from Jane. It's because she pays me more than you do.
Okay.
Do I pay
you? We'll talk about it later, Jane. We'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So Melinda's question is, my question is about freezable bakes. I love having treats stashed away in my freezer in case of a craving, which honestly is most days, I feel ya. And I've managed to successfully freeze things like Texas sheet cake, blueberry muffins and garlic naans that I can later warm up again and enjoy. I'm wondering if you have any bakes that you found freeze and reheat very well after being cooked. Would love any recommendations that you all have.
Okay, this is exactly not the question that she's asked. In my freezer, I have cookie dough that I love to bust out, a raw cookie dough that you can just put straight into the oven to make fresh cookies. Right, so that's my actual freezer tip. But you're asking specifically about things that have been baked. In my opinion, any cake can be frozen and is perfectly lovely the other end. I can't think of things that don't freeze well. Maybe there's an exception. I feel like Jane's about to go off on me. But generally, like sponge cakes and fruit cakes are absolutely fine in the freezer. And I will often, if I've got a big cake to make, I'll make it all a week in advance and stick it in the freezer so that that takes sort of the panic out of the situation. But I think any cake really goes in the freezer.
Oh, yeah, I agree, Dan. So I'm not going to go off on one at all.
Okay. Jolly good.
I used to think that it didn't work terribly well and would always make it fresh. But having made a few big celebration cakes recently, they do freeze very well. And as long as you defrost them and it's not too cold when people are eating them, the texture comes back, especially if you add a little bit of syrup on it as you're sandwiching it together. They're absolutely delicious. But if you want to reheat things, obviously you don't reheat cake. Bakewell tarts will reheat very well if you haven't iced them, actually, if you want them a little bit warm. But we call them scones. Some people call them scones. But I think in the US you call them biscuits, I think.
There are scones as well. It's very confusing.
A really lovely scone. Warm, just flashed in the oven for 5 minutes to warm through with your clotted cream and delicious jam. They do reheat beautifully. There's no excuse not to have a lovely fresh scone ready to go within minutes. I think they're brilliant. But just anything. I mean, I'll make lasagna and freeze it and reheat it. You know, there are lots of things that do. Things that don't freeze very well. Mince pies, fantastic, actually. They are brilliant coming up to Christmas. But things that are custardy. So if you made a bavois, if you made some, you know, I know we freeze them down to then get them out of moulds and then put a mirror glaze over the top. But long-term freezing of those, they do break down. So a big bavoiry type thing will not stay in the freezer for more than a couple of hours, really. So, custardy things. But then you don't have to reheat those anyway. So How about you, Howard? What do you think?
I'm just thinking, I think the other one, just thinking about custard, you can do kind of components, can't you, as well? So things like if you're doing, you can freeze cakes and then use that as the basis for a trifle or,
yes,
you know, so... Mm-hmm. If you are wanting to do something a bit showy at Christmas or over the festive period, think about the components of a dessert that you could actually freeze and then give that a new lease of life with perhaps some fresh custard and cream and so on.
But I think she was saying, wasn't she? She wants something she can take out and, you know, pop in the oven and have a cravings. I mean, the cookie dough one's a really good tip. But sort of little cakes or tarts or flans, mini quiches are always good that you could just warm through, especially now we've got, a lot of us have got air fryers as well, those sorts of things. And, you know, if you've got some nice pastries, I very often will make Danish pastries for Christmas. We try not to have them too often because they are very, very calorific, but Danish pastries for Christmas, and then you just take them out and thaw them overnight and then pop them in the oven for breakfast the next morning, and they freeze really well. They'll only stay in the freezer for about a month, but they pop up really nicely. Sausage rolls, love a sausage roll, baby. You know, you can, don't pre-cook them, I would say. Freeze them individually, then bring them out and whack them in the oven for a really delicious puff pastry sausage roll. Oh, I could go on, actually, with Christmas coming up.
See, I think the reason I don't know much about this is because in my house, not a lot of cooked food ends up going in the freezer. Leftovers just get eaten. They just sort of go in the fridge and get eaten straight from the fridge. I don't tend to freeze things once I've made them. There's always an open mouth hole somewhere, someone begging for some food. So, I don't really freeze things, honestly.
I've got a really nice recipe for rock cakes for another project I'm working on. I've never been a particular fan of rock cakes, but I freeze those and then they come out of the freezer and pop in the air fryer, and my husband absolutely loves them. So there are a number of things. Yeah, we're the same with leftovers. We have them for lunch the next day or dinner the next day, and that's great. But if you do a big batch, when there are only two of you living at home, and you do a batch of 6-8 muffins, put some in the freezer, otherwise you're going to have to give them away, or the end ones are going to be a bit stale, or you have to just stuff your face with them over the course of 24 hours, which is possibly not to be advised.
Quite fancy a rock cake now. I haven't had a rock cake for years.
No, they're good. Actually, it was, again, one of those very traditional bakes, a good rock cake.
My mother made them all the time, yeah. Mm.
Oh, well, I think you've stirred up a lot of memories there, Melinda. Thank you so much for sending us that question. So hopefully you've got lots of different things there we can you can stash in the freezer and pull out whenever you feel the need. So thank you very much, everybody who has sent in a question. Please do keep sending in your comments and questions about the podcast, about the show, about Jane, Dan and Howard here. You can email us at thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com. Or you can contact us on social media. We are at Bake with a Legend on all platforms. And so we go into the Showstopper Challenge. Now, this challenge was, again, 4 hours, which seems to be the standard for a Showstopper Challenge this season, was a sharing size dessert encased in a meringue bomb. Now, Howard, you've said that you liked some elements of Dessert Week and not others. So I'm assuming then that maybe this wasn't to your taste?
This wasn't. Not really. I didn't get it. I didn't get it at all. So I think we've had... what week was it when we had... You have to put a cake in a box, I think. We've had that.
Chocolate week.
And I'm thinking, okay, so maybe you break off a bit of the chocolate and have it with the cake, and I can get that. And I think Prue in this challenge said, oh, you need to break off some of the meringue and have it with whatever is inside. And it's like, oh, this doesn't sound very nice to me at all. I think of a bomb. I think when you're having a meringue bomb, it's normally got ice cream or something in the centre of it. It's more like a kind of baked Alaska type thing. The meringue is on the outside. and it's filled with delicious things. But this seemed to be like a cage for holding something for no apparent reason. So I didn't get this at all. Sorry.
I mean, your fundamental criticism of the showstopper, this is something no one would make. Why would we make this? I think we can apply that to all showstoppers, generally.
No,
but...
no. I disagree. Go on, sorry, Dan.
But listen, I thought there were some beautiful exteriors.
Yeah.
But weirdly, the ones that were the most beautiful often didn't match up with maybe the good things inside. So I think it was kind of, it was a little bit of a challenge of just doing something difficult for the sake of it. I did kind of feel like that. And it's probably not such a surprise that we had so many elements going wrong. When you've got to bake a meringue, 4 hours isn't maybe that much time, is it? Because you need that oven nice and hot for such a long period of time.
I'm totally with Howard on this one. I mean, we had some pretty things, and some were particularly ambitious, I thought, but I didn't see the point of this at all. I mean, everybody was worried, including Prue and Paul, whether the weight of the dessert inside was going to collapse the outer shell of the meringue. I think the meringue would have needed to have been baked for quite a long time in order to give it the sturdiness that it needed. So I'm not sure I would have wanted to eat it particularly anyway. Yeah, they're always going on about style over substance and criticising the bakers. I thought this challenge was style over substance myself. I think the dessert and element inside most of them, you could understand why they did a lot of shoe buns, because they thought that perhaps that would be lighter and easier to stack inside their meringue bomb. No, it was not a challenge for me at all, I'm afraid. I thought it was really disappointing. And I thought, having talked earlier about how the series has been so much better, going back to more accessible and traditional, well, not necessarily traditional, but more accessible and simpler bakes. This one went off the scale as far as I was concerned. I thought it was unnecessarily difficult. And I disagree. I think some of the, with you, Dan, I think some of the showstoppers, yeah, they're always over the top, and we like to see a bit of over the topness, but we can see a point to them. I saw no point to this whatsoever.
Yeah, I would kind of agree with that. The challenge it most reminded me of is, in my season, in my dessert, we had the giant melting chocolate ball thing that had to have a family dessert inside. So it was very similar in a way. It was sort of a family dessert caged in a sphere, and but made out of meringue instead of chocolate, as it was on my season. So I don't think there's a surprise there was a big disconnect between the interior dessert and the outer decoration. The person who I think did the best on this was probably Dan, and Dan had the same idea that I did in my chocolate ball challenge. Is I baked put the whole dessert into the bottom half of the ball, and I thought that was a smart idea, because it just sort of makes the whole thing feel more cohesive. But I'm surprised his meringue didn't just crumble to pieces, because how did it not buckle under the weight of everything that was in it? I actually don't know.
Well, Josh did the same, didn't he? He filled his... I mean, Josh, frankly, well, was Josh. The only dessert that I particularly wanted to eat. But he looked as though he had put some sort of platform in there that would have taken some of the weight.
He
put something in the base that would have spread the weight. And the load,
he was screwing
to a
something
single
in.
Point. He was definitely screwing something in, which I thought was smart. I thought that was clever. But I would disagree again about Dan's. It was supposed to look like the world. It didn't look like the world at all. It just looked like a bit of blue and green meringue. Sorry, Dan, if you're listening, but it didn't do it for me. But Paul said, "Oh, look, this is lovely," and it's just.
In his defense, he called it the pale blue dot, which is the Carl Sagan thing, isn't it? So it's, you know, it's the Earth viewed from very far away. So it was just, it's impressionist.
It's another universe, actually. I thought it was...
it's Quantilist or something. I don't know. Yeah. It gave the rough impression of an Earth. But yeah, I think Josh's was nice. Overall, I think Josh probably was my favourite, and not just because I've chosen him as my winner, obviously.
Yeah, so Josh's cake, it was kind of a cheesecake, and then there was like a moussey layer on top. And when he took it out of this mould, it looked like a fraisier cake. Isn't it beautiful with all the strawberries around the outside? I think he did really well with his, well, with the dessert element of it. Let's leave the meringue to the side, despite the fact it was sort of the main element. I think Prue called it a triumph, and it was beautiful, delicious, fantastic. Lots of positive words.
She said, Wimbledon did strawberries and cream like that, and then I haven't written the rest of it down, but it was a big, big compliment.
Yeah.
I thought some of them did a very pretty job, to be honest, of it. I felt a bit sad for Saku because I don't know why she didn't bake the bottom bit at the same time as she baked the top bit. But I thought it was so pretty. Mm. I thought she did a beautiful job of that. The outside, if we're just judging on the outside now, I thought Saku and Christie's were my favourite. I thought Christie was quite clever with hers, with all those meringue kisses.
It was beautiful with all the spikes on it. It was lovely. Mm. It was very, very nice. What did we think about the technique of Tasha piping her meringue? Would she did it on the outside of a silicone mold rather than on the inside? A lot of people seem to do it on the inside. She did it on the outside, and then hers cracked quite badly. Well, she had to cut the silicone mold.
I would have thought putting it on the inside
would have been easier, and then you can peel the mold off it.
But you get a much prettier surface. Kasaku did hers on the outside, and you don't have that sort of splodged in the middle.
That's true.
Which I think is what happened with Dan's, because it was just inside the bowl and it didn't look, then the outside didn't look good. Whereas Tasha's and Saku's, okay, they had some cracking, but the overall design I thought was much, much prettier and much more effective, which is why Christie's worked so well, because she stuck her things on afterwards to cover up the cracks, which was very clever. I don't know, it was very hard. It's not a challenge I would even attempt, to be honest. I'd try Dan's chocolate one, but I wouldn't try this. We all know how fragile meringue can be, and again, there's no way this was going to end up being a really successful showstopper, because people were going to have sort of crumbling messes. That's why Eat and Mess was designed, because this stuff breaks very easily.
quite right. Howard, do you think then that this challenge was much less focused on the dessert? Because, you know, I don't want to say that people didn't put thought into their dessert. Of course, you guys all put so much thought into everything you bake for the bake-off. But I just feel like some of the profiteroles were, they felt a bit maybe last minute.
Yeah.
And the focus was too much on the outside. So do we think the dessert wasn't really the main focus in this challenge in designing?
I think it's really tricky as well to come up with something that's going to sit successfully with it within a meringue. So Dan had basically gone for some kind of almost like a trifle type thing, wasn't it? Which looked so soupy when they first dipped into it. It looked really, really wet. But also the ones who'd gone for profiteroles, some of them looked as if they were softening really badly and turning into, you know. So it's tricky to kind of think, what can I actually put within a meringue shell that is going to stay lovely and you know, true to the textures that we want it to have, really?
Yeah.
I think the problem with doing, I think three of them, did three of them do profiteroles?
Yeah.
Is you need a hot oven for a profiterole and you need a cool oven for a meringue.
Mm.
And you need to cool your meringue down in the oven, which helps to stop it cracking. So I think it was a bad choice to go for the profiteroles with the meringue, because oven temperatures and cooling ovens down and heating ovens up, I think it. What I would have done something very similar to Josh, I think, and gone in with some thin layers of sponges, maybe some Genoise. Thank you, by the way, for your lovely layered Dobber's Tort recipe, Dan, which I did make actually for to take to dinner last week. Really lovely recipe. But those sponges cool down very, very quickly. So you get those done, then you layer it up, then you chill it, and then you get it to set, and then you make your meringue. And then you have a bit of sitting around. But I think the profiterole route on paper looked good. In practice with oven temperatures was actually completely the wrong choice, because you, one or other or both of the bakes are not going to happen successfully. That was my view.
That's a very good point. Well, we haven't mentioned Matty's, so let's talk about Matty's. Matty's was a, it sounded beautiful. It was a sandwich cake with a pistachio crema, strawberry basil mousse. And he really wanted it to be a taste of British and Italian summer. And he had a nice piping on the outside. It was slightly artistic, which I think was, I think that's a nice compliment. But inside it was very messy. It's almost like he had too many layers in the cake. I'm not sure. Maybe the filling didn't set. I don't know. It was a bit sloppy on the inside. And unfortunately, they said the pistachio was too rich. And they weren't a fan of the strawberry with the basil. So that's sort of all the flavours that they didn't actually enjoy that much.
Strawberry and basil goes together nicely, I think.
Yeah.
I think it was just possibly not to Paul's taste. But I think one of the biggest things is the cream in the cake seemed to just spill out a bit. Maybe there was too much or it wasn't set enough. So, yeah, that seemed to be his trouble there.
But we haven't talked about Saku apart from how pretty her outside bit was. Which I thought was pretty, and I thought it was unfair she was criticised for the bottom bit breaking because other people had disasters with breaking. I would have liked them to have complimented her on the top, but maybe because it wasn't totally round. Again, another thing that made it almost impossible to have it totally round. But actually, her shoe were not good. And how often do we talk about people's inability to cook shoe in the tent? I'm not saying they can't make it at home, but it is one of those things you can really trip up on. I love the idea of the flavours for her, you know, passion fruit pistachio and Irish cream and two different flavours, but really just a few shoe buns in a meringue dome. I think most of them struggled actually, and maybe it was just a really difficult challenge. I felt very sorry for them all actually. Perhaps we ought to do one, guys. Should we have a bomb challenge between the three of us? No, I'm not serious. I'm not going to waste my eggs.
I thought at some point they changed from being shoe buns to just buns, because they'd certainly look quite soft when they were bitten into.
So we know you've got to leave your shoe in there long enough to dry out. Otherwise, they soften really quickly. And the nice thing about shoe is if you take them out and think, oh, I didn't leave them in there long enough and they've gone a bit soft, is you can pop them back in again and rechristen them. There you go. That's something you can make the day before. As long as you cook them and they haven't collapsed, you can just reheat them the day after if they've gone a little bit soft. But no, I thought they all had problems. They were all worried about time and took them out too long, and you've got to leave them in there long enough to dry out. Or scoop all that soft stuff in the middle out. You know, or poke a hole in it to let the steam out and then get the soft stuff out. I mean, shoe's tricky. Don't do it in the tent if you don't have to, frankly. So Tasha did shoe, Christy did shoe.
Saku did shoe.
What did? Oh, Christy's shoe. Yeah. Dreadful, considering it was going to be a croque and bouche. That was never going to happen in there.
Christy had, she said, didn't she, it's not a croque and bouche.
Yes, she did, bless her.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, we know that, bless.
Yeah. It definitely wasn't a croque en bouche. But, yeah, it was interesting. I thought some pretty ideas again from Tasha and Saku. I thought they were the prettiest. Christy's as well with the things. I think the girls, women, did a better job on design, and the men, boys, were more successful with their fillings, maybe.
I think possibly so. Well, better to leave Dessert Week because maybe it wasn't the challenge for all of us and the technical didn't go too well. But you know what? We had some fantastic flavours and we did have some really standout moments, particularly from Dan and Josh. But as we go into the end and we do have to say goodbye to somebody, let's just announce this week's Star Baker. Which was Dan again. So Dan's had another star baker there. Good for him. He had an interesting but very successful Thai green curry inspired creme caramel. He came second in the technical challenge and he had a very nice trifle in his showstopper. So Howard, what do we think of Dan as another star baker?
Yeah, I think it was a difficult week, wasn't it? Because I think generally... Paul and Prue had to almost discount the technical. So they were looking at who'd done well in the signature and showstopper. And Dan did well in the signature and okay in the showstopper. I thought Josh came very, very close. I must admit, yeah. I thought Josh might have just pipped it, but yeah.
I think Dan shouldn't have got it. Because he whips his meringue to stiff peaks with the sugar in and then turned it over his head. There was no danger there whatsoever. We all know when we're testing meringue and we want to be silly and show off, is we whip it just to soft peaks before we add the sugar and then turn it over. There is a sense of danger. You should have lost. There is no danger when you've got it with the sugar in and stiff peaks. There's no way that's going to fall out the bowl. So I think he should have been docked points for that, frankly.
On that alone, Dan.
No danger.
Oh.
Yeah, no danger whatsoever.
And unfortunately, it does mean we have to send somebody home. And this week it was Saku. She had some lovely flavours in her signature, but unfortunately her technique with the creme caramel just wasn't quite there. She was fifth in the technical challenge and she really struggled with the dessert inside of the meringue bomb. So I think she was just a bit unlucky all round there. So what do we think about Saku going home?
I'm sad to see Saku go. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody is lovely. But Saku probably she was a bit kooky. Kooky, is that the word, I think? So it's always sad to see somebody go. I mean, they are a particularly nice bunch. I hope they get on very well together because they seem as though they do and they're very sweet. And that's the trouble with this programme. People have to go home. Well, unless you reach the final, of course.
Yeah.
So that means we've lost Saku, but we do have another star baker in Dan. And next week we have the fantastic Party Food Week, which is a first for Bake Off. So join us next week on the Bakedown podcast where we will be talking about that. And please do make sure that you join us for a class. We hope to see you all very soon. You can have a go at creme caramels yourself with the lovely Howard on Sunday the 12th of November, where we will be making orange and ginger creme caramels as part of our Bake Along Challenge. And who knows what will happen in Party Food Week. So please stay tuned for that. And as I've said before, we do have some fantastic Christmas classes on offer. We have some brand new classes, Jane's Chestnut Roulade on Saturday the 9th of December. And we also have a sausage wreath with Jane on the 16th of December. And we have Dan's classic Kranzikaka stacking biscuit showstopper on the 23rd of December.
Ooh,
and Dan's Bouche de Noël on Sunday the 24th of December. So perfect if you are wanting some Christmas Day bakes, you can bake them with us. And of course, not forgetting Howard, we have Howard's mini Stollen and Lebkuchen on Sunday the 10th of December. And Howard's quite ridiculously artistically spectacular Partridge in a Pear Tart centrepiece on Sunday the 17th of December. So lots and lots to get your teeth into there. So we really do hope to see you at a Christmas class very soon. And don't forget, you can use the code PODCAST to get 10% off your next booking. But until then and until next week, Jane, Dan and Howard, thank you so much for joining me and we'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.